Now, 30 unions representing 200,000 workers in Northern Ireland are coming together to launch a campaign for better pay. The Irish Congress of Trade Unions are indeed calling for the scrapping of the 1% public sector salary cap and improved investment in public services. They're also asking for a living wage of £8.75 per hour. And they're having this major get-together at what's known as the Girdwood Hub. I want to speak to Owen Reedy, who's representing the trade unions. Owen, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Owen, just remind us, as you describe it, as the living wage at the moment. You want £8.75. What's the top end living wage at this moment in time?
Well, the Real Living Wage Foundation, which I suppose statistically look at this, have said that in 2017 the real living wage is £8.45, and for 2018 they've targeted it at £8.75, and they take a basket of goods and they look at inflation and things like that, and it's a wage that they work out as is the minimum that someone can live on to have a kind of a passable existence in life. And as we know, Frank, that the national minimum wage is considerably lower. So we're arguing that really, you know, the legal national minimum wage should effectively be the real living wage. Now
just to get the figure, I know it comes in bands depending on your age, but for a person, I think, who's over 25, who's in employment, what's the highest that they can get?
Well, obviously, if you're talking about the law, the law is the minimum. I mean, people can bargain for pay increases, and, you know, we are involved in collective bargaining, and the law is the floor, not the ceiling, but the legal minimum is £7.50. And then it goes lower for people who are younger. But what we're saying is really, if the Real Living Wage Foundation, who are a kind of an NGO body in London, have identified that across the UK an individual needs £8.75 an hour to kind of have a basic standard of living, well, that really should be the legal minimum. Now, you know, we would argue areas that are that have very little trade union organisation, such as the hospitality sector, 8 out of every 10 workers are on or below that wage, whereas areas that are more organised, the pay is obviously higher. The reality shows that if people are involved in a trade union, the chances of better collective bargaining and better pay is obviously there.
But the reality is you're calling on employers to give an extra £1.25 an hour to every employee who's on £7.50. That could make or break some employers.
No, we're not calling on that, Frank, at all, because, you know, the majority of the members the trade union movement represents earn higher than that. What we're saying is that the legal minimum wage should be effectively a higher rate of pay. So yes, £7.50 should become £8.75. But I'll give you an example of how that can be funded, because people say, well, you want things, but how are we going to pay for it? You look at Hospitality Ulster, and as I say, the hospitality sector is probably the worst sector when it comes to low pay. They're lobbying currently for a reduction in the VAT rate. They're making the argument that through Tourism Ireland, the island of Ireland is marketed internationally as one, and they're saying the VAT rate should be the same as in the Republic of Ireland. Now, we believe there should be no change in that VAT rate unless Hospitality Ulster are prepared to kind of sit down and say, we have a low-pay problem in our industry, we need to improve that. And one of the ways maybe to improve that, if they were prepared to do that, is to perhaps look at the VAT to boost that part of the economy. So there are ways of doing this. This isn't all about taxing people more. We need to also look at our industrial strategy, our lack of here in Northern Ireland. Productivity is very low. So we believe the trade unions, policymakers and employers should sit down and, I suppose, map out what do we want the society here to look like and what economic policies are required to make that a reality.
Are you aware of the trade unions being strong in the private sector at all? They only seem to have teeth in the public sector.
Well, I mean, the reality shows, the figures do speak for themselves, Frank, and they say something. Two-thirds of all trade union members in Northern Ireland are in the public sector. One-third are in the private sector. So, you know, organised labour is stronger in the public sector. But that being said, the shop workers union, USDA, have doubled their membership in Northern Ireland in the last 10 years. Unions like Unite, GMB and others have organising strategies and techniques. So they're trying to organise more workers in the private sector. But our view here is that workers right across Northern Ireland, whether they're in the public sector or the private sector, need a pay increase. Inflation's at 3%. People are getting poorer. We asked the Nevin Institute, who are a centre-left economic think tank, to do some work for us. And the statistics are very severe. One in three of all workers feel their work is insecure. One in five of all workers are on or below the real living wage. So there is a low pay problem here in Northern Ireland, and it's not just a private sector issue. There is low pay in the public sector. So we believe that this austerity that we've had for the last 6 to 7 years has not worked. It's failed. And we need to now look at economic policies that we can work with others on to try and boost the economy in Northern Ireland, so that Invest NI aren't marketing this place as a cheap place to do business, but an effective and efficient place to do business. And I think quite a lot of employers would welcome that.
How easy is it to convince young people that they should be paying subs per month to a trade union?
Well, you know, union organisation is a challenge the world over. You know, the stats in the UK have shown that over the last 20 years, our movement has steadily declined when it comes to membership. So, you know, we have to be creative. We have to be inventive. We have to come up with strategies that attract the next generation of worker. And I mean, the world of work is changing. You know, in 20 years' time, I think a trade union leader in America has predicted that, you know, about 50% of the jobs that are manual labour will be automated. So there are a whole lot of issues, and we know that young people, and women in particular, are disproportionately affected by low pay and insecure work. So we have to develop strategies within our own movement to be responsive and reflective to the needs of that generation. And, you know, quite frankly, that's a work in progress. We haven't got it all right, but we haven't got it all wrong. So, you know, as I say to you, USDA is one example. They've doubled their membership in Northern Ireland in that whole retail wholesale area in the last 10 years, and I think that's quite significant.
You used to, back when I was a lad, associate trade unions with industrial action. There's industrial action to an extent now, but it seems to be the absolute refuge of last resort.
Well, it is. And at the end of the day, you know, most trade unionists would rather engage in negotiations, and most trade unionists would like to address the issues with the employer, whether it's public or private sector, without recourse to industrial action. Because if you have industrial action, the process that you're engaged in has failed, and we all have to take responsibility for that. That being said, it is from time to time, unfortunately, a necessary strategy. But our view would be it shouldn't be the strategy. It should be part of a strategy if it's necessary. And, you know, maybe it's something that unions need to look at, because at the end of the day, you have industrial action. Sometimes, you know, workers are discommoded. Sometimes the firm loses. Other times, it's completely necessary. And I've been involved in quite a number of disputes myself, but they are at a last resort. Trade unions, by our very nature, we would rather talk and lever change and negotiate change at the table rather than take industrial action. But regrettably, it is a necessary tactic from time to time.
I heard someone on this programme a couple of weeks ago when they were talking about the budget with James Brokenshire, and there was a considerable amount of money that was coming towards health. A commentator said maybe now the health unions will be more flexible. Do you need to be more flexible?
Well, first of all, more money coming towards health, I don't think so. Health got an increase in the budget of 5.4%. Health inflation is at 6%, so it's as you were. The health unions are very keen to sit down and negotiate about reforming the health system in Northern Ireland. But you've got to remember, these workers have effectively been dealt a situation where they are at least 8% worse off than they were in 2010. So, you know, when morale is so low, when people are running to stand still, you've also got to remember Northern Ireland has lost 26,000 public servants. That's 11.5% of the public sector in the last 6 years. So people are being expected to do more with less when they have less resources to do it. And the reality is citizens are suffering. So whoever made that comment that health unions will be more flexible, this isn't going to be, you know, we're not going to transform our health service by health unions alone. It's health unions, it's government, it's employers sitting down and, you know, negotiating change, but on a basis that makes sense and in a framework where health workers can negotiate pay increases in line or in excess with inflation, because inflation's at 3% now. Since 2011, when the pay cap was introduced, I think only in 2 years has inflation been more than 1%. So workers are worse off. And the same can be said for many, many workers in the private sector. So we believe Northern Ireland needs a pay increase. How do we fund it? We think we need a forum where employers, policymakers, politicians and the trade union movement can sit down and map out what type of a society do we want and what are the economic policies we need to develop to make that realizable. I don't think people can wait any longer. We've had 7 years of austerity. People are frustrated, and this campaign is our response to that situation.
And finally, Owen, is there a possibility we have too many unions? I'm going to use the example of education. They seem to have four or five unions within the education sector, maybe more, not all pulling in the same direction, not all taking a stance at the same time. So are we, for want of a better term, spoilt for choice when it comes to trade unions, but the trade union animal is diluted by the multi-presence?
Well, I think, Frank, actually, you're erring on the side of caution. I think there's about 9 or 10 unions involved in education, if you look at the support staff. I mean, unions, you know, are made up of people with a history and a culture and proud traditions. If you were starting from a greenfield site in Northern Ireland, you know, would you have 30 trade unions? You wouldn't. If you were starting today to devise this, you'd have one big union in health, one in education, one in services, one in manufacturing. But you are seeing unions coming together and merging and amalgamating. But I suppose that's why the Irish Congress of Trade Unions exists, because our job is to work with all of the unions to try and work with them to develop policy so they can work collaboratively, so that, you know, working together the sum of their parts is greater than working individually. No different to the TUC in Britain. So, you know, we have a history. We come from somewhere. You know, unions have sprung. There are small unions, large unions, mid-sized unions. There are Irish unions, British unions, international unions. At the end of the day, you know, they are all united on these three issues to try and end the scourge of low pay in Northern Ireland, to have better public investment and to end this 1% pay gap. And I think that's a credit to the trade union movement in Northern Ireland that they are going to speak with one voice on this issue.
And are you having this big hub get together in the hope that somewhere down the line Jeremy Corbyn will be the Prime Minister?
Well, you know, some unions are affiliated to the Labour Party, others aren't. That's going to be a matter ultimately for the electorate. I don't think we can get any worse a government than we currently have, whereby workers have suffered through austerity, whether they are private or public sector workers. What we're doing with this campaign is launching it today. We're hoping to have about 120 political meetings over the next 12 months with politicians right across the Westminster constituencies in Northern Ireland. We're hoping to engage with about 80 non-government organisations. And we're hoping to engage within the workplace, within our own movement and beyond in communities, to try and mobilise some support for this campaign, to try and, I suppose, get to a place where we can sit down and negotiate and try and implement economic policies that are in the interest of this economy and this society here in Northern Ireland. We're the largest civic society group. We have 200,000 members across Northern Ireland. And whether we have devolution or whether we have an alternative system of government or whether we have the Tories or Labour, you know, workers are clearly saying, we're not waiting any longer. We need a proper pay increase and we need to have our say and use our representative influence in this society and in this economy. And that's what we hope to kick off today.
Okay. Owen, thanks for your time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank.